talking about?
No.
There's a general... principle which is applicable to all the parshas in the Torah, all the events which are related in the Torah about personalities, particularly about the Ovos, Shiftei Kol, Moshe Rabbeinu, etc., etc. When we hear somebody using a certain type of language, somebody says, why are you in a bad mood? Because somebody did me a terrible injustice. Right? Somebody did something terrible to me. The definition of doing something terrible to you is very subjective, because every individual, depending on what his moral ethical standards are, has a different definition of what's called just and what's called unjust. If you take a simple example, take the concept of stealing. He stole something from me. Well, what's the definition of stealing? It depends who you ask. If you ask somebody who's a big shot in the mafia, he's got one definition of stealing. If you ask an accountant, he's got a different definition of stealing. If you ask a lawyer, he's got a third definition of stealing. And if you ask Aaron Leib Stein in Lahavdil, he's got a fourth definition of stealing. Right? Depending on who you are, that's how you're going to define what stealing is. The higher your ethical moral code is, the more ethical moral person you are, or the more ethically and morally sensitive you are, then the finer your definition of stealing gets. The lower you are morally and ethically, then the lower your definition of stealing gets. Therefore, if one considers the language of the Torah, if your starting point is believing that Torah is an Hashemayim, and if your starting point is that Torah is of divine origin, then Torah doesn't work with the same human subjectivity that the everyday language that we use works. And Torah, if it's of divine origin, by definition, is absolute truth. And if it's absolute truth, then it's absolute objectivity. And if it's absolute objectivity, then the concept of averus, or the concept of acts, when the Torah describes them, are on a completely different plane, or on a completely different level to the way in which we think. But because the Torah has its moral ethical code, which is totally divorced from human subjectivity, therefore something which by us would perhaps be vaguely reminiscent, if that at all, of stealing, the Torah uses a very straight expression. The Torah was a geneva. So when the Torah talks about chatoim of the Ovos, or when the Torah talks about chatoim of Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Torah talks about chatoim of the Shiftei Kol, it's talking about it in its perspective of what's considered to be a chet and what's considered to be an avera, which in our minds would probably be nothing at all, and we probably wouldn't even be able objectively to understand why that's considered to be an act of theft, or why that's considered to be an act of dishonesty, because in our framework of reference, it's 100% okay. On the other hand, because Torah, as I keep saying, is Midoshan Hayroah, it's teaching us something, therefore we've got no choice but to look at it from our perspective. But you have to bear in mind the whole time that even though we're looking at things from our perspective, this is not the way that it was in reality. It's just being brought down in very, very uncouth language in order that we should understand it. The Parsha starts off by saying that Vayetzi Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, that Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Harono, and he was on his way to, he's setting out on a journey to Choron. Vayifke B'mokim, and he came to a certain place, which Chazal say is Hare Maria, is the Mokam HaMikdash. Vayalen Shom, and he went to sleep there, Kibo HaShemesh, because the sun had set. Vayikach Me'avne HaMokam, and he took stones, put them around him, put it around his head, the Pasuk says. Vayishkav B'Mokam Ahu, and he lay down to sleep in that place. And then he had the famous dream of the angels going up and down. Chazal explaining this pasuk, and Rashi quotes it on the spot, says that Yaakov Avinu actually set out and went to Haran, and he actually got to Haran. He didn't stop, even though the Makom HaMikdash was on the way, even though the Makom HaMikdash was on the route that he was taking to Haran, he didn't stop there. When he got to Haran, he suddenly realized that he'd gone by the Makom HaMikdash and he hadn't davened there. And he said, it's not right. There's an inyan of Mokum Mispalalu Avaisai. There's a Mokum to pray in the same place where your ancestors davened. Without going into why, what, and when, but there is such an inyan. Therefore, he said, it's not right. Therefore, he decided he's going to go back. Now, to go back to the Mokum HaMikdash was a good few days of journeying. So Chazal say that a nes happened, and he had what's called a Kfitzas HaDerech, meaning that he travelled at such a speed, or whatever, however you're going to explain it, that miraculously he arrived there immediately. The supernatural time machine. He got there before he left. The way in which Chazal describe it is that Hare Maria actually moved. It moved, as it were, towards him and came to meet him. And Rashi says, well, if God wanted him to daven in the Makom HaMikdash, because that was Makom Shispalu Avosai, then that's where Yitzchak, the Akedah, etc., etc., then why didn't God make sure that he stopped on the way as he was traveling? To which Rashi says that, seeing that he himself didn't stop, so fine, you don't want to stop, carry on. But then, when he decided he wants to go back, then God gave him a lending hand and did a miracle for him, as it were, and allowed him to go back, which doesn't really explain too much, because we're still left with the question, if it's important, then why didn't God help him to stop there? He takes these stones and he puts these stones around his head. Why does he put these stones around his head? So Rashi says, again, B'Shem Chazal, he put these stones around his head because he was scared of Chayas Rois. So, what are these stones around his head going to do? Yeah, I saw this summer a bear up in upstate New York walk straight through, literally, walk straight through a 7-foot stone wall. Just kalahoya, as if it wasn't there. It just went boom, and the whole wall went flying. So, Yaakov Avinu is very well protected because he's got 12 stones around his head. I mean, what was the point of the exercise exactly? Then he has a dream. Well, even before he has the dream, he goes to sleep. Vayishkav v'mokam ahu. So what does Rashi say, Vayishkav v'mokam ahu? He quotes Chazal. There he went to sleep. 14 years he was in Shem Va'ever, he never went to sleep. How did he go to sleep here? Yeah? On a couple of stones. So that means 14 years in Shem Va'ever, he never went to sleep even on a couple of stones. I think there's a Gemara somewhere. Talmid de Chachamim here should know. I think it's a Gemara in the Dorim. Guy makes a ned, he's not going to sleep for 3 days. It's a load of nonsense. Why? This person can't survive without sleeping for more than 3 days. Everybody's going to fall asleep if he doesn't sleep for 3 days. Is he trying to tell me that that he managed 14 years to go without any sleep? For 14 years he was going on without sleeping? You really want us to expect that was the case? Then he has this dream. What does he see in the dream? So as far as the pasuk is concerned, he sees in the dream that there are angels running up and down this ladder. Chazal say that the dream was a little bit more complicated than that. Chazal say, Omer Rav Barachia b'shem Rabbi Chelboi, that Rav Barachia, it's a medrash, that Rav Barachia said in the name of Rabbi Chelboi and Rabbi Shmuel ben Yassina, Herei HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYaakov Avinu. What Yaakov Avinu was seeing in this dream wasn't just some angels flapping their wings and going up and down a ladder. Because these angels were representative of something. What were these angels representative of? So the Midrash says that these angels were representative of Malchus Bavel, the empire of Bavel. And what he saw was the angel of Malchus Bavel going up the ladder and coming down the ladder. Then he saw the angel which represented Malchus Modai going up and going down. And then he saw the angel that represented Yavon going up and going down. And then he saw the angel that represented Edom that was going up and going down. In other words, he saw the rise and the decline of the four empires that were going to subjugate Klal Yisrael in the period of the four Goliaths, which will take place until the coming of Mashiach. That's what he saw. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam says to him, Yaakov, Yaakov, why don't you go up this ladder as well? Loma Einat Ta'ila, why don't you go up? Meaning, go up the ladder. To which the Midrash says, Ba'isa Shor Nisyore Avinu Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu got scared. V'yoma, and he said, Kishem Sheyesh La'elu Yerida, in the same way as these guys went up the ladder, but they came down. Kachani Yesh La'Yerida, so if I go up, maybe I'll come down as well. So why, what's the point in the exercise? Omale HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Im Ata'ele, if you go up, Ein Lecha Yerida, you're never going to go down. Don't worry about it. So therefore, go up the ladder. V'loi he'emin, but he didn't believe it, Yaakov Avinu. V'loi ada, he didn't go up the ladder. And then the Midrash continues and says that's a pasuk, because the pasuk says that one of the biggest sins that Klal Yisrael do is they don't believe in things that the Ribbono Shel Olam can do. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, you just messed up big time. Why? Ilu Elisa, because if you would have gone up, as I told you, ve'emanta, and you would have believed, lo ha'isa l'cha yirida la'elam, you'd never have any type of decline whatsoever. Elohel ve'lo'emanta, because you didn't believe me, therefore Klal Yisrael is going to decline, and therefore bonecho mishtabdim ba'alolu alba malchias ba'elam hazeh, Klal Yisrael is going to suffer for many, many years from these four empires. They're going to have to pay them taxes, they're going to persecute them, and they're going to suffer, all because you didn't go up that ladder. And the Mefarshim there on the Midrash ask, surely Yaakov Avinu was justified in not going up the ladder, because we all know that this is a world which works on a basis of reward and punishment. God can promise you good things, but you can mess it up. And Yaakov Avinu was scared. The Ribbono Shel Olam says to him, fine, go up. And I guarantee you won't come down, you won't decline. That's all true if I do what I'm meant to do. But I'm a human being, and human beings have failings. And maybe I'll mess up, and if I'll mess up and I'll do a chet, maybe I'll get punished for it, and I will decline. So what's the point of starting, Bichol? What's the point of the exercise? So why did the Ribbono Shel Olam have such a criticism of him that he didn't go up? He wakes up from the dream, and what does the Torah tell us? The Torah tells us that he makes him, Ribbono Shel Olam promises him in the dream all sorts of things. That's the Yom of the Kaidim, the Sfein of Enigma, what's going to happen with him, the children, etc., etc., etc. And then the Pasuk says that Yaakov Avinu makes a neder. What's the neder that he makes? The neder that he makes is the following. Im ye'alekimi modi, the shomreini baderech. He says, he makes a whole deal with the Ribbono Shel Olam. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, and this is the way Rashi explains the psukim. He says, if you're going to stand by me, in other words, if you're going to do what you promised me, namely, that hine enoichi imcho, and you're going to protect me the way you said, v'shamaticha b'chala sheteilech, and you're going to promise me that you're going to give me lechem lechol and beged lilboish, and you're going to promise me v'shavti b'shalem abeisavi, then v'haya Hashem li alikim, then I'll be able to do my function and I'll be able to build Klal Yisrael. And not only that, but if you promise me that I don't get ruined by the influence of Lavan, and that Shem Hashem will be Nikra on me and on my children, and all my descendants will be on the right path, then, says Yaakov Avinu to Ribbono Shel Olam, then I'll be able to do what you tell me to do. Then I'll be able to build Klal Yisrael. And again, the Mefarshim ask there, what happened to the concept of being Mistapek B'Mu'at? You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam tells you you've got a function in life, you say to him, fine, you know, here's the list. If you give me this, and 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 the Yonah Pollock, then I'll be able to function. Otherwise, forget it. Right? Well. Then he carries on, Yaakov Avinu, and he gets to a well. And he gets to a well, and on top of the well is a stone, and there's groups of shepherds hanging around there, chilling out, doing nothing. And he says to them, what are you doing? Why are you hanging around here doing nothing? And they explain to him that they can't roll the stone off the well. There's not enough of them there. It's a very heavy stone. They're waiting for more shepherds to come. When more shepherds will come, then they'll be able to roll the Evan off the stone. What does the pasuk say? Vayogalesa Evan meal piya ber. So Yaakov Avinu walks up to the stone and he rolls the Evan off the stone. He rolls the stone off the well. Says Rashi v'shem Chazal, he did it like a normal person takes a cork out of a bottle. Right? 1, 2, 3, roll it off. You got hundreds of shepherds hanging around there, waiting for another few hundred to come, because all of them together, maybe they're going to be able to schlep the Evan off the thing. And here he is. He just rolls it off. Where do we find anywhere in the Torah any recording of the great physical strength of Yaakov Avinu? Other than the fact that he didn't sleep for 14 years, which could be put down to the physical strength. But other than that, and that's not awesome, that's also Chazal. But where do we find anywhere that Yaakov Avinu was a Gibber? And if he was a Gibber, where was it coming from, this Gvura? And I have a different problem. What's the normal reaction of a person when he comes to a place and he says, why can't we move any further? And they say, because a 400-foot trailer got stuck here. So what are you waiting for? We're waiting for 600 people to turn up, and then we'll pick up the 400-foot trailer and we'll take it away. Oh, don't bother. Right? Which normal person would walk over and say, no, let me just push it? Because why on earth did he think that he would be able to roll the stone off if they're telling him that this is an everyday occurrence, we know this well, we know this stone, we know for a fact that you can't get the stone off the well unless you've got X amount of people. Why was he so convinced that he would be able to do it? They didn't think twice, he just walked up to the well and he rolled it off. Where did he get that Hava Minna from? There's a very interesting Rambam. The Rambam wrote a number of Sfarim. The Rambam was a philosopher, so he wrote philosophy Sfarim. He wrote Mori Nevuchim, he wrote Shmoneh Prokim. The Rambam was a Parshan. He was a commentator. So he wrote commentaries. He wrote commentaries on the whole of Shas. It's just that we haven't got it. We've got 4 pages on a manuscript. More than that, we haven't got. The Rambam wrote on Mishnayos that we have. He wrote Perush on Mishnayos. The Rambam also wrote Halacha, right, that we have. We have the Rambam's Halacha. That's Mishneh Torah. Mishneh Torah is psak. Mishneh Torah is not lomdus. Mishneh Torah is not machshava, where you can say this is based on Aristotelian theory, and at the time it was important to say it like this because that was the prevalent philosophical understanding of the time, and therefore the Rambam was trying to play with the prevalent philosophical understanding of the time. Mishneh Torah is a synopsis of Torah Shebal Peh. It's nitzchi. The Rambam writes in his Hakdama to Mishneh Torah that instead of having to learn Shas, you can learn this if you want to know what the bottom line is. That's why the Rambam wrote it, and it's halacha lemaisa. So when the Rambam writes something in Mishneh Torah, he's telling us fact. He's not telling us a philosophical suggestion. It is not a doctoral thesis that maybe this is the pshat. When the Rambam says something in Mishneh Torah, he's telling us this is fact. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu said to Klal Yisrael after he came down from Har Sinai, that this is what he heard from God. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva in Perek Hay, Halacha Aleph, the following. The Rambam says, Rishus kol adam nesun alai. You should know that every single person has absolute, total control to do what he wants to do. There is nothing which predetermines a person's actions, says the Rambam. A person has free will, and a person can decide what he wants to do. And the Rambam formulates in a very specific language what he means. And the Rambam says the following. Im rotza letateis atzmoi lederech teiva. A person has total control over himself to determine whether he wants to direct himself in a positive direction. So that's the first element of total control that a person has over himself. That is, he has the ability to direct himself in the right direction. That doesn't mean that he's going to go in the right direction. That doesn't mean he's going to do what he has to do. And that doesn't mean that he's going to end up a big tzaddik. But he does have, says the Rambam, total control over the decision as to whether Rotza, he wants, Lahateis Atzmo Lederech Teiva. Second of all, says the Rambam, V'liyeis Tzaddik, Rishus Piyodeh. He also has the ability, and it's under his control, it's totally under his control, to become the ultimate definition of what a tzaddik is, however you're going to define a tzaddik. Right, according to the Balatanya, a tzaddik is somebody who manages to destroy completely, totally, and utterly his Yetzirah. He has no Yetzirah anymore. If you don't want to take that, take other definitions of tzaddik. More mitzvahs than averus. He has the ability to do that. Yeah, that's under his control. It's his decision. Says the Rambam, he also has free will, and he also has total control over himself, that he has the ability to determine im rotza lahatis atzmo lederech ro v'liyeis rosha rishus piyodeh. The same thing in the other direction. He can decide to want to be on a derech leiteva. And he can decide to become the world's greatest rosha, however you're going to define rosha. If you want to take on the Baratanya's rosha, right, that he has no Yetzer Tov anymore, he's totally destroyed his nefesh, because he's completely ultimately evil. Or you want to take on Rav Avinu, however you want to learn Pshat. But that's his decision. Says the Rambam, therefore, human beings are unique. This is the only species in creation which has this capacity and has this ability. And then the Rambam carries on and says something very straight. There is absolutely nothing which can stop a person from making one of these two decisions. There's nothing in the world which can stop. And the clear, this Rambam makes no sense whatsoever. There's nothing in the world that can stop. There's plenty of things that can stop. I can want to be the biggest tzaddik in the world, and I can want to be the biggest rosh in the world. It could be I'm in a location where it's not practically possible. And I haven't got the ability and the means to get to the location where it is possible. There can be all sorts of forces of nature which are not allowing me to do certain things. How can anyone make this blanket statement, halacha lemaisa, that there is nothing in the world which can deter a person? Of course there are things in the world which can deter a person. There are 30 guys sitting here who can start talking now and won't finish for a year, telling me all the things that deter a person from being Berichah V'Tev. And out of all those things they say, which will cumulatively be many millions of reasons, there will be 0.00001 which are actually true. So there are 10 reasons which are true. So how can the Rambam say that there is no ikkur, it doesn't exist, there's no such thing. There's nothing which can prevent a person from deciding to do the right thing. There's a pasuk in Tehillim. David HaMelech says the following. David HaMelech says, Shamayim Shamayim O Hashem, that the heavens belong to the Ribbono Shel Olam, V'ha'oretz Nosan Livnei Odom. Now we never think about this, because we're too busy singing Kalibach Nigunim when we say it, on the odd occasion that we say it during Hallel, to actually think about what the words mean. But what is David HaMelech saying? Hashemayim, Shemayim, Hashem, Boris, Nasan, Livnei Adam. So you're telling me it's geographical location. God lives in heaven and we live on earth. Incorrect. God lives on earth as well. He's just running around in the sky, so we can't find him. Says the Marit, what does the Pasuk mean? The Pasuk means, says the Marit, the following. The Pasuk means that Hashemayim, Shemayim, Hashem, God rules over the heavens. But Ha'oretz Nasan Livnei Adam, when God created the world, he gave man the ability to control nature. Says the Marit. A human being has the ability to control nature. And I venture to suggest that Be'etem it's a Chazal, because Chazal say that when Adam HaRishon was created, the Malachim wanted to say Shira to Adam HaRishon because they thought this is some type of divinity. Why do they think it was some type of divinity? Because they realized, Ribbono Shel Olam, Shemayim Shemayim Hashem, Ba'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. The man has an amazing power, which is a godlike power. He controls nature. Says the Rambam, this is Halacha L'maisa. Aim, there's nothing which can be ma'akiv a person from doing anything if he sets his mind on doing it. Because man has the ability, if he would make the decision as a real decision, to control the way in which nature works. What does that mean? What that means is, the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives every single individual anything he needs in order that the choice that he made should be fulfilled. But if he doesn't make the choice, then he's not going to get it. You have to make the choice. If you make the choice, the Ribbono Shel Olam will give it to you. If you don't make the choice, you won't get it. And the way that it works is that as soon as a person makes a choice, the Ribbono Shel Olam will supply him with everything he needs that that choice be successful in order that he can realize the choice that he made. Yaakov Avinu never made the choice to stop at Hare Maria. For whatever reason. If he didn't make the choice, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, I don't walk around like a waiter giving out sushi. Would you like a piece? That's not my job, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. You come and ask for it. In other words, you make the choice. You want sushi, I'll make sure the sushi gets to you. It'll get to you. But you have to make the choice that you want it. You don't want to daven in Beis HaMikdash with the Mokom HaMikdash? Don't daven in the Beis HaMikdash. No sweat off me, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. The minute that Yaakov Avinu says, I made a mistake. I should have davened in the Mokom HaMikdash. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, you made the choice. You should have davened in the Beis HaMikdash. Fine. Now we'll bring the Beis HaMikdash to you. I 3 days away, there is no such Metzias. We'll find a way of getting it to you because you made the choice. How, what, and when, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's not your business. I'll get the Beis HaMikdash to you. Yaakov Avinu made a choice. I grew up in a certain house, and I got a tremendous chinuch in that house because it was the house of Yitzchak, says Yaakov. But I'm going to Lavan. And when you go to Lavan, it doesn't matter where you grew up, you need to prepare yourself for the Nisoyan that exists being in Lavan's house for who knows how long. At least a minimum of 7 years. What he thought worked out 14 in the end. And for that I need preparation. It's not enough that I'm Yitzchak's son. That doesn't always work. I see this expression, Yichus liegt in Reut. Yichus doesn't help you in these situations. So he goes off to the Yeshiva of Eva for 14 years. And he makes a decision. I need to pack into those 14 years the maximum that it's possible for me to get as a protection against Beis Lavan. Says Rebbe Shimon, you made that choice? Okay. Then you control nature. Nature is such that a person can't sleep, can't go 3 days without sleep. That's my problem, not yours, says Rebbe Shimon. I don't supply people with 14 years without sleep. But if they make a choice that they want to spend 14 years without sleeping, either Latoif or Lara, then I'll find them a way of doing it. Because once you make the choice, it'll happen. Because you control the situation. That's a special siyata d'shmaya you get, irrelevant of what the laws of nature, quote unquote, are. You made a choice that halachically it's pikuach nefesh, and therefore you have to do something in the middle of nowhere to protect yourself from chayes rois. True, there isn't very much you can do, but you make a choice that you want to do it. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, fine, I'll do the rest. According to the laws of nature, enoch enamo, these stones shouldn't have helped in the slightest. But you made the choice that you want to be Mekai in the mitzvah of Shmiras Nefesh. You overpower nature. We'll worry about that, says Rabbi Nishwad. You made a Bechira that you want to help somebody to get water for themselves and for their camels. You go and do it. Either laws of nature say it's not going to work, says Rabbi Nishwad, that's not your problem, that's my problem. You make the move, I'll do the rest. The Rebbe Shlom didn't have any tainas on Yaakov Avinu, on the cheshbonus that Yaakov Avinu made. I don't want to go up the ladder, because if I go up the ladder, maybe I'll fall down like everybody else. That's all very well and good in Lomdus, says the Rebbe Shlom. But in Metzias, you have to make the decision that you want to go up the ladder. And then you leave the rest to me, says Rebbe Shlom. The tefillah on Yaakov Avinu wasn't that he didn't go up the ladder. The tefillah on Yaakov Avinu was that he didn't bother to pick up the challenge. I'll try and go up the ladder. There's 50,000 ikuvim, which lichura, are very good reasons why I shouldn't do it. I'll ignore it and I'll do my bit. And if I do my bit, then the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will do his bit. The Torah tells us that the daughter of Pare, Bitya Bas Pare, was walking along the river edge. And she sees a teva there. She sees a basket floating in the water. Chazal says she realized straight away this must be a Jewish kid who the parents are trying to save him from the gezeirah of all Jewish males being killed by throwing him in the river in this man-made little boat, whatever you want to call it. So she stretches out her hand in order to take it. Say Chazal, Gemara in Saita, that it was at a distance where it wouldn't be humanly possible to be able to grab it. Say Chazal, what happened? And this happened. Her hand stretched out. Derech Nes. Ishtava v'yoda. Her hand stretched out and she managed to grab the basket. I once heard from Chaim Shalev, he said a shmuz, he said, how come that it's not recorded anywhere in Chazal that a second less happened, and that a hand went back to its normal length. Said Reb Chaim, and it's also not recorded anywhere in Chazal that she walks around the rest of her life with two hands, one like this and one like this. Yeah. Elamai, what's the pshat? doesn't mean that physically a hammer broke. It means the following. Sometimes you see something and you say, there's no way, the derech hateva, that I'm going to be able to achieve that. It doesn't make any difference. Stretch out your hand and the Rabban Shalom will do the rest. And that's what happened. Bichi Bas Pari stretched out a hand, the Rabban Shalom did the rest. How, what, when? That's not our concern. You rule over teva. Teva doesn't play a role. If you want something enough, says the Rambam, that you choose to do it, it will happen. Bein l'tov and bein l'ra. The Gemara says that Adam Arishon ra'a misayfa oilam at sayfa oilam. When Adam Arishon was created, he saw from one end of the world to the other end of the world. There's another expression in the Gemara that Adam Arishon was from one end of the world to the other end of the world. And Adam Arishon was min ha'aretz l'rakia. We're not talking about physical dimensions of Adam Arishon, right? That he was as wide as the world is wide and as high, as tall, as from Aretz l'shamayim. That's not what Chazal are talking about. What Chazal is saying is that entire nature, min ha'aretz, ad ha'shamayim, from one end of the world to the other end of the world, that was all under the control of Adam Arishon. All he had to do was to be boicher, and Ribbono Shel Olam would give it to him. He did the chet, and Ribbono Shel Olam says that Chazal changed the whole system. But it's interesting the language in Chazal. Chazal doesn't say that Ribbono Shel Olam abolished this. All the Chazal say is that miyatoi, Ribbono Shel Olam compressed it. He made it smaller. Now it only works after Bechira. But Adam Arishon, it worked even before Bechira. Adam Arishon never had Bechira until the chet. After the chet only happens through Bechira. The Gemara says in Zvachim that the kohanim, that part of the Aveda was that they had to throw certain parts of the korbanos on the Mizbeach. When the korban was a bird, they had to throw the feathers sometimes. Ever tried throwing a feather in the open air? And Chazal say that they managed to throw the feather sometimes 30 amos. Right? So even if you're going to take B'chaim Noesh here, it's still a long way. Try throwing a feather 30 amos. Impossible. Ask them a fortune, how did they do it? The answer is, they threw it, that's all. Don't ask questions. If you throw it, leave the rest of the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you're Beicha Batov, if you're doing the right thing, then the Ribbono Shel Olam will do the rest. If we would understand that B'metzias, it doesn't exist ikuvim. Person controls everything. We have the ability to do whatever we want. We have the ability, in a split second, just by one act, by saying, I want, of changing everything, and perhaps our lives would look a little bit different. I've said a number of times, the Baal HaTanya has an expression which he uses in his Pirush on Chumash in Likutei Torah. He says, Medav Levin mit the Parshas HaShavua. You have to live with the Parshas HaShavua. You have to look at current events and you have to look at the parsha and put the two together and it'll tell you something. We just went through 8 days of war. So fine, 9 korbanos. 9 korbanos, another 30 people who are categorized by the army spokesman today, including civilians, as what's called patua beinani. Patua beinani in English would be medium stage injuries, not life threatening. What does that mean? They asked the doctor, who's the head of the Lashonei hospital. He said, that means they lost both legs, that means they're blind. I mean, they're not life threatening, they're okay. No, don't worry about them, they're all right. In times gone by, there were Nevi'im around who had the right and the ability to be able to say if something occurs, it's for a reason, and what the reason is. After the Nevi'im, they were tzaddikim and knew how to do this. Rabbi Kupitz showed me this week a Chasam Sofer, who in two places, once in his drushes and once in his tshuvas, writes that something, an event that happened, a war that happened in his period, right? He says, I'm telling you, he says, Chasam Sofer, right? He says, I'm telling you that the reason why this happened is because of X. Okay? The war, we haven't got that today. We don't have Nevi'im around, we don't have Tzaddikim around, we have no idea why things happen. But we do have Chazal. We have Mufurisha Gemaras. On that, nobody can argue. I was thinking the whole of this week. Everybody stood Rosh Hashanah and everybody says, Mi Ba'esh, Mi Ba'mayim. Right? The world got hit twice over the last 6 months. Once with Mayim, and once with Esh. Something's being said to us here. Somebody's telling us something. So I don't know what we're being told. But if you've got shells flying, which are basically Esh, then what is Rabbeinu Shlomo trying to tell us? There's a Gemara. It's a Gemara in Maseches Shabbos and Daf Kuf Yutes Amud Beis. The Gemara says the following: Omer of Yehuda Berei Rav Shmuel Mishmei Derav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav Shmuel, in the name of Rav, Ein Hadleika Mitsuya. Explosions and fires are only found B'Mokim Sheyesh Chilul Shabbos. Where there's Chilul Shabbos. How do we know this, says the Gemara? It's a Mefurish Pasuk. Im loy tishmu elai lekadish shem haShabbos. The Rebbeinu Shlomo says the following: if you don't listen to me, in order to be mekadish the Yom HaShabbos, v'hitzati eish b'she'orel, I will set fires alight within the parameters of Eretz Yisrael, v'achla armenes Yerushalayim, and it will destroy buildings in Yerushalayim. And the Mefarshim say it doesn't mean Yerushalayim Dafke, it means Eretz Yisrael in general. V'lo yisichben, there'll be no way of putting it out. Says the Gemara, what do you mean there'll be no way of putting it out? Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, v'shor she'ein b'nei adam mitzuyin l'chabeisa. There's not going to be anybody's going to be able to put it out. Says the Malshah, that the Gemara is telling us that explosions and fires, so the Malshah, as it says, explosions and fires come about because of Chilul Shabbos. Particularly when you don't get enough time and warning to be able to do anything about it. If there's nobody around to put it out, doesn't necessarily mean that there's nobody there. It means that you haven't got a chance to put it out because it's 40 seconds. That's all that you have. The Pasuk says in this week's parasha, as we said, Vayar, that Yaakov looked, Vehinei be'el basode, he saw a well in the field, Vehinei shom shlesha edrei tzein reitzim aleo, he saw three groups of shepherds who were hanging around by the well. They wanted to get water out of the well, but they couldn't, because ha'even g'dayla al pi ha'be'el, because there was a stone, a large stone, which was on top of the well. The Torah just doesn't tell stories for no reason at all. It's coming to tell us something. Olam Hazeh in Chazal is compared to a field where, like a field, you can grow things and have a beautiful crop that comes out of a field. But in order to grow things in a field, you need to irrigate the field. You need water. And besides that, there are always things which grow in a field which disturb the growth of what you want to grow. There's weeds, there's thorns, there's caitzim, the dadarim, all sorts of things. Eilam Hazeh, say Chazal, is the same as a field. You can grow a beautiful crop in this world. You can reach the highest dargas in this world. On the other hand, it's a material world. And because it's a material world, and because it's Olam HaShafel, therefore there's a lot of thorns and a lot of weeds here. And even though, when a person is Beicher Batoiv, he showed it on the Bria, and all the Kuvim and all the Maniyas disappear, but nevertheless, where does one get the Koyach to make the right choice? Where? Yeah, fine. Once you make the choice, once you make the decision, that's fine. But each and every one of us know that the difficulty is not when we've made the decision. The difficulty is to make the decision. Because we all know that once we make a decision, we're committing ourselves, and we don't like committing ourselves. Where does one get koyach from to make the right decision? When the Rebbeinu Shlomo brought down the neshama of a Jew, from up there down here, into this material world, the Rebbeinu Shlomo knew that this problem existed. Where is this neshama who's coming into this world, which is a world which is full of kaitzim, it's full of mafriyim? And true, if he makes the right bechira, he'll be able to overcome it. But where's he going to get the koyach from to make the right bechira? So the Rebbeinu Shlomo put into this world something which is a source of siyata d'shmaya, that the person can make the right decision. There is something which exists in this world which is part of the Bria, which the Rebbeinu Shlomo created in order to help a person to make the right bechira, to be mater atzma derech teiva. And that's what the pasuk is saying. The Rebbeinu Shlomo created a soda. The Rebbeinu Shlomo created this olam achumi, which is like a soda, which is full of kaitzim, it's full of dadarim. And we have to grow a crop here. We have to become what we're meant to become. And we can do it if we make the right choice. But how are we going to make the right choice? Where are we going to get the strength from to make the right choice? Says the Rebbeinu Shlomo, no problem. I'm going to put a be'er in the soda. I'm going to put a well in the field. And that well, in the same way as that well will supply water to irrigate the field, that well will be the source of the siyata d'shmaya for you. The Zohar says the following. All the siyata d'shmaya that any Jew gets, be he the biggest tzaddik in the world or be he the biggest rosha in the world, says Isaiah. Any siyata d'shmaya that a Jew gets, even if he's on the lowest darga that exists, the stories that we see in Chazal of people who reached rock bottom, people who hit rock bottom and then were chayzer b'tshuva. Sometimes in a minute, and the Gemara says, Yesh kainei lomei b'sha'achas. Says the Zohar, where do they get that from? Where do they get that koyach, that siyata d'shmaya, to make that change? Where did it come from? Says the Zohar, Kulam yankim asiyata d'shmaya ha'shefa ve'abrocha mi'shabbos kodesh. The entire siyata d'shmaya that a person gets comes from Shabbos. Ki min ha-be'er ha-hu. Because, says Isaiah, from that be'er, in that field, yishku ha-adorim. That's where the adorim, the sheep, are going to get their water from. That's going to supply the siyata d'shmaya. One can be b'shiflus adaga, one can reach rock bottom. If one knows how to utilize a Shabbos, then the Rebbeinu Shlomo will send the siyata d'shmaya that a person should make a bechira l'tayv. The Chassidish Sfarim say that on Shabbos night before Kiddush, we say one chapter from Mishlei. And the chapter we say before Kiddush from Mishlei is Eishes Chayil. And everything that it says in Eishes Chayil, say the Chassidish Sfarim, is connected with Shabbos. All the psukim that we say in Eishes Chayil are all connected with Shabbos. Chagoyer nosno laknani. It's going on Shabbos. Say this Chassidish Sforim. Chagor is Miloshin Chagura, belt. Nosan leknani. Shabbos gives a belt to the Knaini. In Chassidish literature it says the following. Knaini is the epitome of the lowest daga that a person can do. Because when the Torah wants to tell us not to do the worst things, the Torah always says, don't do like Maisa Knan. The ultimate in immorality, the ultimate in arroyos, the ultimate in everything is Knan. Even if a Jew has reached the lowest depth and he's Knan, Chagoyo nosnol Knani. Shabbos is the life belt. Shabbos is the guy who's drowning and is being thrown a life belt. Hang on to it, and it'll shut you out of it. What's this Evan Gdela al Pia Be'er? Chazal say in Sukkah and Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph that there are seven names for the Yetzer Hara, and one of them is Evan. Based on the pasuk v'yisiras levo evan mipsochem, that's the evan gdela, which there is ala be'er. There's a tremendous yetzer hara which exists legabe Shabbos, and the chassidish svarim say that the yetzer hara of Shabbos attacks the Jew not on Shabbos; it attacks the Jew on erev Shabbos. It doesn't attack the Jew as much on Shabbos as it attacks him on Erev Shabbos. Why? Because if you want to stop at the well, you have to put the Evan on the well before the water starts pouring out of the well. Shabbos is the well which pours out water. Therefore, if you want to stop it, you have to Erev Shabbos put the stone on the well. The Yetzer Hara doesn't want that a person should have the Siyata Dishmaya of Shabbos. So he puts a tremendous effort that there shouldn't be Shmiras Shabbos. And if there's no Shmiras Shabbos, then the Yetzer Hara knows what happens. When there's no Shmiras Shabbos, there's Eish. And that's what the Yetzer Hara wants. The Yetzer Hara doesn't want that a Jew should enter Shabbos Bikdusha. He doesn't want that. I think it's a Slonim Rebbe, Sechein Evrach, who said this. He said that when you've got two armies fighting, you've got two countries at war with each other, the easiest way to win a war is if you can cut off the water supplies and the food supplies of the other army. Just put a siege around the country, blockade it. Don't let water in, don't let food in. They will eventually surrender because nobody can survive without food or water. And that's the easiest way to win a war. And that's the most dangerous war that the Yetzer Hara plays with us. The most dangerous war that the Yetzer Hara plays with us is cutting off Siyata Dishmaya, destroying Shabbos. If you can destroy Shabbos, then you know that the next week is a lost week for the guy. If the Shabbos isn't the Shabbos, then there is no Siyata Dishmaya the following week. There will not be any Siyata Dishmaya the following week. Rabbi Yosheber Soloveitchik of Boston writes in one of his essays a very, very interesting insight. He says 60 years ago, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, the concept of a Shabbos observer was non-existent kimat in America. There were no Shomrei Shabbos. For a variety of reasons, and we all know it. He says, Baruch HaRashem, if you look around today, you have people in the highest positions, and they are Shomrei Shabbos in America. Shabbos observance isn't a problem today in America. You can even manage to be a vice president and you'd be Shomrei Shabbos. It's possible. You can. You can actually even be a president and be Shomrei Shabbos. Right? Somebody tried doing it. He never made it, but he tried doing it. And he had a whole system. They worked out for him a whole system here in the Mechon HaTechnologi HaLocha, how he would be able to do it. However, he says something very interesting. He says there was one thing that used to exist in times gone by, and that disappeared, and that hasn't come back. not the Shabbos observer, the Erev Shabbos observer. There used to be the Shomer Erev Shabbos. Jews had a Seder Ayoim, Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos didn't look like a normal weekday. The concept of somebody working after Chatzos and Erev Shabbos was non-existent 100 years ago. Erev Shabbos after Chatzos, a Jew spent, after he's gone to the mikveh, being Mavi Sedra, saying Shir HaShirim, saying Tilim, sitting in a Bes Medrash. Why? Because he knew that where the Yetzer Hara is trying to get him is B'Knisas HaShabbos. That's where he's trying to get him. The Yetzer Hara doesn't care about your Shabbos. He knows if he can get you to light that cigarette after the siren goes off, after 40 minutes before Shkia, you are done. That's all he needs. There'll be no more Siyata Dishmaya. There will be no more Siyata Dishmaya that week. Because that's the Metzias. The Metzias is the Shabbos gives a Siyata Dishmaya. He doesn't care what you do Shabbos. He knows that when you're silly drunk on a Friday night, that's it. No Siyata Dishmaya. You will not understand the Gemara, you will not understand the Rashi, you will not understand the Tosfos, you will sit by the Gemara all day, it's going to go in here and it's going to go out there. There is no Siyata Dishmaya. You don't daven on Shabbos, the only day of the week where a person doesn't have to run to do things, where he's got time, right? There's a guy here who sits in the Bais HaMikdash every day who davens on a Shabbos morning, watching once guys, 7 hours, 8 hours, 9 hours he davens, right? From Pesukah Dezimra until he finishes Musaf. And the summers, you can see him davening. Even in the winter, even now in these weeks, you can see him davening 4 hours, 5 hours. 6:30 in the morning, you can hear him saying Pesukah Dezimra. 1 o'clock in the afternoon, he's not holding by Musaf yet. He's under his talis and he's davening. That's what Shabbos is all about. Shabbos is about davening, Shabbos is about learning, Shabbos is about a Shabbos meal, Shabbos is about Zmiras. And then you have Siyata Dishmaya. But if your Shabbos is simply another expression of an Irish wake, then there is no Siyata Dishmaya. It doesn't exist. It comes from nowhere. Then you get the same Siyata Dishmaya that the drunken Irish guy gets. That's what you get, the same Siyata Dishmaya. And that's what the Yetzer Hara wants. He doesn't want that we should have a Ruach of Shabbos. He doesn't want that there should be a concept that, as it says in Halacha, in Shabbos your halicha is under, your walking is different. On Shabbos your talking is different. There are certain things you talk about on Shabbos, certain things you don't talk about on Shabbos. If a guy finished his meal here, I'm moichel you on the Zmiras. I'm moichel the Zmiras. I also learned in yeshivas where they didn't sing Zmiras. I don't know yeshiva where they never sang Zmiras. On principle. It was a shitta, I'm not going to go into it. But the yeshiva in which I learned in the Chevron yeshiva, they never sang Zmiras. Right? In the winter, there were about 250 bochrim in the yeshiva when I was there. In the winter, you would never find less than 150 bochrim learning in the Bais HaMikdash from 2 in the morning till 8 in the morning on a Friday night. Never. And to this day, when they've now got 1,200 bochrim, you'll never find less than 600 bochrim there. Go down and look once on a Friday night. Why? Because they've already had 8 hours sleep by the time 2 o'clock comes round. You go to bed at 6, 7, and you get up at 2, right? Make a cheshbon. So you've got 7, 8 hours sleep, you've got a normal night's sleep, so you can learn from 2 till shachris. You've got 6 hours straight that you can learn after having slept for 8 hours. So what do you do instead? We'll go to Beis Yisrael, we'll come down to Beis Yisrael, we'll go up to Beis Yisrael, we'll come down to Beis Yisrael, we'll go up to Beis Yisrael, we'll make 6 sivavim up and down to 7. Maybe we'll see a 60-year-old girl who weighs 400 kilo. Maybe. And then we'll be thrilled. Then we've made it. Then we've made it. Right? The fact that the municipality moves her the next day because they want to build a building, that doesn't worry me. That's all the Yetzer Hara wants. The Shabbos shouldn't be a Shabbos. And because Shabbos isn't the Shabbos, so wars break out and people get killed. And we just carry on, same as ever. And this Shabbos is going to be seen the same as last Shabbos, and the same as Shabbos before, with the same thing. And then somebody's going to go up next week to the thing and start shooting over. Why? Because there are bombs flying. Time to wake up.